Graphic Audio. A movie in your mind.
Graphic Audio presents The Goblin Trilogy by Jim C. Hines. Narrated by Nanette Savard. With performances by Dylan Lynch, Terrence Aselford, Eric Messner, Casey Platt, Thomas Keegan, Richard Rowan, Mort Shelby, Kimberly Gilbert, Danny Gavigan, Michael Glenn, and Tim Getman. Book 1, Goblin Quest.
Jig hated muck duty. Walking around with the muck pot hanging awkwardly from his shoulder as he doled out gobs of the slow-burning stuff wasn't so bad. True, if he got callous, it would be easy to splatter a bit of muck onto his skin. Even when it wasn't lit, the mixture could raise blisters in a matter of seconds. When burning, the yellow and green flames were almost impossible to extinguish, which was why they used muck to light the lair. But Jig was careful, and unlike most muck workers, he had survived for several years with all his fingers intact. Jig would have been perfectly happy if he weren't the only goblin his age who still got stuck with muck duty. It was a job for children. Goblins Jig's age were supposed to be warriors, but the few times Jig had gone on patrol had only sealed his reputation as the clumsy runt of his generation. He adjusted the thin handle on his shoulder. The goblin lair held 46 firebolts. Each one was little more than a hole in the dark red obsidian of the walls, with a palm-sized depression at the bottom to hold 2 days' worth of muck. Jig squinted at the fourth firebolt, the last in the corridor that led out of the distillation room and into the main cavern. To Jig, the flame was nothing but a blur. He could bring the fire into better focus by squinting, but that required him to put his face closer to the fire than he liked. The bowl was nearly empty. Whoever made the rounds yesterday had been lazy, and Jig would have to relight many of the bowls before he was done.
Lazy children.
He dipped a metal spatula into the muck pot and carefully scooped out a large blob. This he plopped into the dying fire bowl. The flame grew as it touched new fuel. He scraped as much muck from the spatula as he could, then extinguished it in the sack of sand on his belt. It wouldn't do to return a still-burning spatula to his pot. He passed into the main cavern, a roughly circular, high-ceilinged cave of hard obsidian. The walls felt greasy to the touch, the polish of the rock hidden beneath years of grime. While the muck fires gave off very little smoke, several centuries of very little had led to a blackened, soot-covered ceiling. The sweaty odor of 500 goblins mixed with the powerful scent of Golaka's cooking. Jig's mouth began to water as he smelled a batch of pickled toadstools boiling in Golaka's great cauldron. Jig kept close to the wall as he worked. The faster he could finish his duties, the sooner he could eat. But the other goblins weren't going to make things easy. 5 or 6 large goblins stood bunched around the closest fireball, watching him. Porak and his friends. This was going to hurt. Jig hunched over and walked toward the group. Porak grinned as Jig approached. Long fangs curved up toward his eyes, and his ears quivered with amusement. Nobody moved out of the way.
Oh, Cousin Jig, muck duty, is it? How long before you're ready for real work?
Real work?
Glory, fighting, bloodshed! We want you to come along on a patrol.
I can't. I barely started on the muck duty.
That can wait until they mix up a new batch of muck. One that hasn't been contaminated.
The muck is fine.
Finger seized Jig's arms from behind.
What are you doing?
Porak held up a black rat by the tail.
Oh, look at that! I don't know who's more frightened, the rat or the runt.
The goblins laughed as the rat flipped and jumped, trying to free itself.
Everyone knows rat fur makes the fireball smell awful. A shame someone let this one into the mix.
The rat struggled harder. The hands holding Jig relaxed. Porak dropped the panicked rat into the muck pot.
Oh, not so fast, cousin. Meet us for duty in 2 hours. And don't make me come looking for you.
Well, at least I'm not on muck duty anymore. I'm going on patrol. A clear step up in the world. So I'm a nut happier.
Goblins spent years waiting for the day they could go from lighting fireballs to helping protect the lair from adventurers. Maybe that was it. Odds were, if you spent long enough looking for adventurers, sooner or later you were going to find some. Adventurers didn't fight fair. They brought magic swords and rings, wizards and spells, and warriors who cut through goblin patrols as quickly as Golarka's spicy rat dumplings passed through the old chief. Which reminded him, he still had a rat to dispose of. He headed for the kitchens. Golarka herself was gone, but one of her helpers was there, chopping up an unidentified animal who had made the mistake of snooping around the tunnels. Jig tossed the muck-soaked rat onto a nearby table.
What are you doing with that slimy thing?
One of the others stole it from the kitchen. They wanted me to give it back before you noticed, so they wouldn't get in trouble.
That's muck! We can't eat that! Who was snooping around the kitchen anyway?
Porak said he'd kill me if I told. Oops!
Porak was it? Golarka will want to get her hands on that one.
Can I go now?
Jig slipped out of the kitchen. Jig stopped by the privies on his way to meet Porak and the others. Waiting until nobody was looking, he knelt and grabbed a red-spotted spider the size of his hand. The spider crawled up his arm and onto his head.
Ooh!
It gave one of Jig's ears a sharp nip before settling into his hair.
Stupid fire spider.
Smudge, the stupid fire spider in question, ignored Jig's complaint. He was probably upset that Jig had neglected him all day. But since taking Smudge along on muck duty would have been unwise, Jig refused to feel guilty. The last thing he needed was a spider who grew hot when he sensed danger. Jig met the others near the cavern exit. Of the 12 goblins, Jig was easily the smallest. And he tried to avoid the worst of the shoulder punching and mock fighting.
Ah, Jig, there you are. Jig's going to be joining us tonight.
Should we grab something to eat first?
No, I think we'll avoid the kitchen tonight.
Jig wondered if anyone else guessed the origin of Porak's black eye. Not that he was going to tell them.
Let's go!
They passed through a long tunnel until they reached an old glass statue of a goblin, the marker that defined the edge of goblin territory. It had stood there for generations and was probably as old as the mountain itself. No one knew who had carved the statue. Being goblins, nobody particularly cared either. A big rock would have marked the spot equally well. 2 large goblins stood guard. Jig shivered as they passed into neutral territory. He hoped nobody had seen, but he couldn't help it. The underground inhabitants divided these tunnels among themselves. The goblins held the southern warrens. The larger hobgoblins took the warmer caverns to the west, farther from the entrance. Past the hobgoblins was the cold lake of the lizardfish. The lizardfish were the worst, and goblins avoided them if they could. When food grew scarce, the chief would occasionally send goblins to the lake to hunt. Fortunately, the lizard fish couldn't leave the lake, and an uneasy truce kept the hobgoblins out of goblin territory. Simple fear kept the goblins from trespassing in hobgoblin territory. Jig glanced back at the statue. That was a true goblin warrior, one who had supposedly killed no less than 3 humans before an angry mage turned him into a green stain on the wall. Made of molded and in many places chipped black glass, he was as tall as most humans, with huge fangs that nearly touched his eyes. He was a real goblin, and even Porak paled in comparison. Jig barely came to the statue's shoulder. Jig's arms and legs were like thin sticks, and his constant squint was nothing like the mean glare most goblins wore.
Torches!
One of the others handed out torches.
This is dumb. Why not run ahead to warn any intruders that were coming? Maybe we should sing to you, in case they're blind.
Go!
Yellow nails closed on the blue-green skin of Jig's shoulder. Smudge grew warm and scampered to Jig's other shoulder.
Because, young Jig, we're going to send a scout ahead to make sure everything is clear. That's called tactics. Now, you have to be smart to stay alive down here. Look at our cousin Jig here, talking to himself and so distracted that I walked right up without him noticing. If I were human, I could have killed our scout while he babbled. Then where would we be? We have to be alert. We have to be strong. We have to be tough. You hear me? You have to be tough. But even the weak ones have their uses, you know. This one's gonna run ahead to flush out any game. Our own little hunting dog. We'll stay here to protect the lair. Now, if you find anything, we'll be along to do the fighting. All you have to do is stay alive long enough for us to rescue you. Go get 'em, dog! If you see anyone, make sure you scream before they kill you.
Jig's ears burned as he put distance between himself and the others.
Do we really want to send a runt to do a dog's job?
At least now Jig understood what was going on. He knew why he had been chosen to go with the patrol tonight. They wanted him to check the tunnels so they could play their games. This way they could carouse through the night without technically ignoring their duty. Jig reached up to make sure Smudge was still there. He scratched one of the spider's legs as he walked.
Too bad I can't teach you to baron on command. I'd love to slip you into Porrick's trousers one of these nights. If Porrick were smart, he would have brought me in on his plan. How does he know I won't tell the chief what he's up to? Nah, even Porrick is not stupid. If he gets in trouble, he'll know who told. Next time he'll put me into the muck pot.
Jig extinguished his torch on the floor and started walking again, taking a left at the first fork, then two rights. He let his ears and his memory guide him through the dark tunnels.
Maybe I could blackmail him instead. Threaten to tell the chief if Porrick doesn't do what I want. No more getting sent ahead on patrol while the others gamble.
Maybe he'd even get a real sword instead of the stupid kitchen knife he carried now.
Be patient, lad. You've got to make me lose count. I'll have to start again.
Jig pressed himself against the wall and swiveled his ears forward to better hear the voices ahead.
By all the gods, do not allow me to interfere, O wise one. Perhaps you'd like to wait while I summon a calligrapher to assist you. And you'll want an artist to paint another scene of old Earthmaker.
Enough. We're not going anywhere until I finish my map, and I'll not be able to do that until you get out of my way.
Jig clutched his knife in both hands. What should he do? Screaming was out of the question, despite Borak's orders. Of course, it would alert the others about the intruders. It would also alert the intruders about Jig. That was a problem. Humans had longer legs, and therefore longer strides, so Jig's chances of making it back to the other goblins were slim. He knew how long he would last against real warriors. About as long as the average fly lasted once Smudge trapped it in his web. Speaking of Smudge, Jig didn't know if the fire spider could sense Jig's own anxiety, or if he had heard the intruders down the tunnel, but the top of Jig's head was growing uncomfortably warm.
It's all right, don't worry.
Jig backed away as quietly as he could. His free hand went up to pet the spider. That turned out to be a mistake. Smudge apparently didn't see Jig's hand coming. Jig's hair lit up like oil-soaked rags. The knife fell to the floor as Jig tried to beat out the flames. Smudge leaped away and raced toward the opposite wall.
Stupid spider!
Jig soon managed to put himself out. He leaned against the wall and closed his eyes, trying to block out the pain.
What's the matter with you, Smudge? You have eight eyes. Eight! How could you not see my hand? I'm the blind one. What were you doing up there, daydreaming? I should let Galak make a pot pie out of you.
Smudge skittered back and climbed up his leg. As he reached Jig's waist, Jig snagged him and lifted him to eye level.
That's the last time I bring you along on patrol.
Smudge's head and legs drooped. Jig set the spider on his shoulder.
Just try not to set me on fire again, okay?
Only then did it occur to Jig to wonder why he could see everything so well. His own aborted blaze had lit the tunnel well enough, but it should have ruined his dark vision. In fact, if it weren't for the torchlight behind him, he would be completely blind.
Oh, dong.
Jig turned around. It was the human he had heard earlier. In one hand, the human held a blazing torch. The other pointed a long sword at Jig. A long, gleaming, very sharp sword. Jig bet the blade didn't wobble in its handle either.
Draw a weapon, or cry out for aid, and you'll never draw breath again. Turn around and walk into that room up there.
The human followed him to the room Jig had always thought of as the shiny room. Tiny glass tiles, no larger than his fingernails, covered the entire ceiling in sparkles of color. The ceiling domed upward, and the swirls of blue, green, and red all merged into a spectacular fireburst at the center. Even with a sword at his back, Jig couldn't help but look up as he entered. The adventurers had a small fire going, and the reflected firelight danced on the tiles, turning them into a thousand jewels. Glaring at Jig was a 4-foot-tall mountain of muscle, armor, and tangled black hair. In other words, a dwarf. The human sheathed his sword.
What's this?
I found him snooping up yonder passage. Not much of a spy. He set himself aflame in his panic. You lived here long?
The human spoke terrible goblin. Without waiting for an answer, the dwarf jumped to his feet and waved a large sheet of parchment in Jig's face. His goblin was marginally better.
We've got ourselves in a room here that's 13.5 paces by 12 paces with a door in each wall. I don't suppose you'd be knowing which of those doors will take us to the deep tunnels.
I was lost myself.
Probably true, Darnak. Even for a goblin, he has the look of a kitchen drudge. Perhaps a bit thick in the head as well.
I've thought the same of you from time to time, Barius Wendelson. That doesn't make you any less dangerous.
How dare you speak to me in such tones?
I've known you since you were a stripling. Prince or no, I'll still crack your skull if need be.
Darnak grabbed an iron-banded club and waved it under Barius's nose. While they glared at each other, having their standoff, Jig took the opportunity to look around. The human was polished, was the best word Jig could come up with. His chainmail gleamed silver, every link a mirrored ring. The jeweled hilt of his sword was wrapped in gold wire, and the pommel had been molded into the shape of a lion's head. His knee-high boots were soft black leather, and the purple velvet tights looked as expensive as the rest of the outfit. They also looked ridiculous and uncomfortable, but who was Jig to criticize human fashion? Barius was strong, broad in the shoulders and trim around the waist. What Jig had first taken to be a black hat was actually his hair, cut in a perfectly straight circle around his head. His goatee was trimmed into a point so sharp you could use it for a weapon. The dwarf looked the meaner of the two. The scale mail he wore under his white robe appeared battered but well cared for. Jig could see where many of the scales had been replaced over time. Likewise, his war club was nicked in several places, as though it had turned aside sword blades or crushed more than a few skulls. As for Darnak himself, a black tangle of hair hid most of his face. His skin was a leathery brown color. A crooked nose, almost as large as a goblin's, poked over a bushy mustache and beard. Jig could see 2 piggish eyes hidden beneath caterpillar brows. Jig saw a third member to their party as he looked around. A skinny elf sat by the fire with his knees to his chest. He ignored the argument, the goblin, everything but the flames. His old trousers and torn shirt were as poor as Barius's clothes were fine, and his red hair was cut short and ragged. His face was odd, and it took several seconds for Jig to figure out why.
Surface types insisted on wearing at least 8 layers of clothing, which made Jig wonder how many hours they spent dressing themselves. All those clothes made it harder to tell, but if he wasn't mistaken, he was actually a she. What her role in the group was, Jig hadn't a clue. She was clearly the least threatening, but she could still be dangerous. She looked nothing like the graceful, slender elves of legend. For a second, he wondered if she might be some sub-race he had never heard of. He knew there were different types of elves, forest elves, mountain elves, and so on. But urchin elves?
So what do we do with him, Your Majesty?
Safest to slay him. Perhaps he could be of use to us. Idiot or no, he knows more of these tunnels than we do. At worst, he can precede us to lull the suspicions of any creatures we encounter. Still, I dislike the idea of a goblin in our group.
He could help us. Look at Rihanna. She picked a lock on the gate just as neat as you could ask. Rumor has it the path we want is cloaked in watery darkness. Maybe he knows where it is.
Perhaps he does. But a world of difference exists between an elf, even one of her status, and a goblin. You should be watching for other monsters, girl. To invite a goblin to join us is to invite treachery, cowardice, and deceit into our beds. What help he could provide does not justify the risk.
As if you've ever gotten anyone into your bed without flashing round your gold and your title.
Jig tried to bite back a laugh and wound up choking instead. Various whirled while Jig fought for breath. The human's pale lips thinned. But then he shrugged and turned back to the dwarf.
It doesn't know I understand the language.
Jig was thankful for the days when the older goblins would sit around and test the younger one's use of human, the dominant language of the surface dwellers. Each misspoken word earned a kick to the behind.
I'd just as soon send him to hell, Your Majesty, as I would a snake who slipped into the palace. Not even a snake has its uses. You've always been quick to throw things away without thinking. This is no game, and we could get killed down here faster than you can piss yourself.
Granted. But perhaps you've not heard your own words? That is precisely the reason I feel we should eliminate the goblin.
Oh, aye. Kill the snake if you want. But then tell me how you plan to find his hole.
Well...
That's right. Damn me if I'm not starting to chip through that granite skull of yours. Who knows how many of them are hiding up these tunnels? For myself, I'd rather know a bit more about what we're walking into. Otherwise, you're likely to find yourself stepping in something unpleasant.
Jig kept his face still as they glanced at him.
They want to use me as, a guide? If so, they're likely to be disappointed.
Jig knew some of the tunnels, of course. Every goblin did. He'd learned how to feel the slope of the ground and listen for the echoes that told of open caverns. He learned the general layout well enough to avoid the hobgoblins or the lizardfish and their lake. He also heard many stories of the horrors that guarded the hidden tunnel to the lower caverns, and the gruesome death that waited for any goblin foolish enough to wander alone and lost through the tunnels. Jig had memorized everything he could learn about these tunnels, and he could find his way blind and deaf. He had moved through the darkness, one hand always on the wall, relying only on his memory. That day, memory had proven stronger than fear and confusion, and Jig had made it home. But the adventurers wanted him to lead them beyond goblin territory and the neutral tunnels. Once he crossed those borders, he would be as lost as any surface dweller. What could he do? He couldn't lead them back to the goblin lair. His job was to protect the lair. Even if Porak and the others had sent him off on his own, he still had to try to stop the adventurers. Jig needed to find out what they wanted. Treasure, obviously. Every adventurer wanted treasure.
But what else? From the gems on Barris's sword, this lot is already wealthier than the average adventurers. What reward would fuel their greed so they would rush to their deaths without a thought?
Some guide you picked? shut up.
Jig's ears shot straight up. Finding out what the adventurers wanted would have to wait. If he wasn't mistaken, those faint voices he heard from the tunnel were coming closer, and they sounded like goblins. His heart sank. They sounded like drunk goblins. Soon the others noticed as well.
So, what's this then? More of you? Planning to wait until your friends come along to take us on, were you?
We should slay him now before he can warn his comrades.
No!
The little bugger speaks our tongue. Thought you'd sit there and spy on us.
Well, have you anything to say in your defense?
Jig knew what a real hero would do. A real hero would muster up something clever on which to spend his last breath. He would face death like a man, with courage. He certainly would not kick the young prince square in the vitals. Jig was no hero. As Barius tumbled to the ground, Jig whirled and sprinted up the corridor as fast as he could.
Quiet! Intruders! Adventurers! Three of them behind me! We need to head back to the junction!
Who's that? Jig! Running back with his tail between his legs already!
Jig, we thought an ogre had gotten you.
No, I thought a bat had mistaken him for a bug.
Oh, but it couldn't be Jig, because Jig would never be foolish enough to tell me what to do.
Jig saw orange torchlight on the tunnel walls up ahead.
Park, you don't understand. There are intruders back there.
Intruders are not you. Don't command here. Not unless you want to fight me for it. Well, now come on. Most likely our little pup got too close to the entrance and was frightened by his own shadow. But we'll check it out anyway. Weapons ready. And you can lead us, pup. Take us to these intruders of yours.
Come on, they're up this way.
This was turning into a very bad day.
What are they?
Jig had almost reached the shiny room, and still no sign of the adventurers. This wasn't right. Something should have happened by now. The tunnel ahead was dark.
They must have put out their fire.
Oh, hear that? Jig's invisible friends are hiding. Maybe he frightened them off.
Porak raised a torch and shoved past Jig.
There's nothing to worry about. Let a real goblin go first to show you that...
Porak spun and fell. The shadows flickered as his torch dropped to the ground. Suddenly, the others were rushing forward, swords and clubs waving in the air as they charged. Porak, an arrow sticking out of his shoulder, pulled himself up and stumbled toward the room ahead. Jig saw one of the drunker goblins stumble to the ground. Not an unusual thing by itself, but at least half of the group had fallen, and nobody was getting back up. He couldn't see well enough to figure out what was causing their collective loss of balance. Hurrying back, he grabbed a fallen goblin and shook him hard. His fingers touched warm blood on the goblin's back. Slowly, Jig released his grip. He had never been in battle before, but he was fairly certain this was one dead goblin. The arrow sticking out of his back proved all the evidence Jig needed. Sticking out of the back. Jig flattened himself to the floor as that sank in. Something buzzed over his head and another goblin fell. The few who had survived long enough to enter the room weren't doing too well either.
Back, you unwashed creatures! You monstrous cowards of the dark! Back, I say!
But the prince and dwarf are both up ahead. Who's behind him in the dark? The elf? Elves are supposed to be fearsome archers, but the girl isn't carrying a bow.
Another arrow shot past, and Jig decided perhaps this wasn't the best time to ponder such mysteries. He crawled toward Porak's dropped torch. Not that he'd be able to see much better in the light, but maybe he would at least know which way to run. He crawled past several more bodies to get to the room. Every time an arrow shot past, he cringed and stopped moving. Just a little farther. Once he made it to the doorway, whoever was back there would have to stop shooting or else risk hitting their own party. Jig finally made it. He pulled himself into the room and rolled away from the doorway. All the goblins but Porak lay dead on the floor. Despite the arrow in his shoulder, Porak was still attacking Darnak. Porak fell. Now two arrows stuck out of his body, but he still lived. As Jig cowered in the corner, all he could think was that being a real warrior seemed to involve a great deal of pain and blood loss. Darnak kicked Porak's sword away, then walked over to greet the archer in the doorway. This wasn't the elven girl. Jig couldn't tell exactly what the shimmering form was, but it was too large to be Rihanna. He stared, rubbed his eyes, and tried again to focus. The outline of the archer ran and shifted like water, blurring into the shadows. No wonder none of the goblins had noticed him. If he was this hard to see in torchlight, he would have been all but invisible in the dark tunnels. As he entered the room, the shadow shimmer vanished, as if a curtain had been drawn back, revealing a slender human. He looked around, nodded curtly at Darnak and Barius, and set about unstringing his bow.
Nice shooting, Risland.
Though, as always, brother, your approach to battle leaves much to be desired in the way of honor.
The one called Risland began to examine the fallen goblins.
If you prefer, I will let you seek the rod by yourself. Don't worry. When I see our father again, I will be sure to tell him you died with your precious honor.
Risland's hand shot out and grabbed Jig's ear. As he was jerked to his feet, Jig had the unwanted opportunity to study the newcomer up close. Risland was as tall as his brother, but of a more slender build. He wore a loose black robe, tied at the waist with a simple white rope. A short sword hung from one hip, a quiver of arrows from the other. Green tattoos covered the backs of his hands and vanished into his sleeves. They looked like writing, but the spiking, angular characters were no language Jig had ever seen. Not that Jig was much of a scholar. Risland was completely bald, lacking even eyebrows or eyelashes. Jig wondered if he owned a fire spider. Risland's eyes ran the length of Jig's body, and the goblin stiffened. His fear grew stronger, if that was possible, for those eyes glowed with a soft red light. Taken with the robes and the tattoos, those eyes meant Jig was standing far closer to a living wizard than he wanted to. Barius shoved Jig into the middle of the room. On his shoulder, Smudge flared again, and Jig thought he smelled burning skin.
No wounds on this one. Probably lost his weapon and spent the whole fight hiding in the corner.
This goblin shows more sense than yourself, brother. Had the one who escaped you before been armed, you would have far worse than bruises to show for your carelessness. As is, you are fortunate I was in place before he led his fellows to attack.
Here now. We won, and that's the only thing that matters when you get down to it. Let me tie these ones up before they try anything else. Barius, why don't you go find out where Rihanna's hiding herself?
Find her yourself, friend dwarf. One of these creatures will pay for his assault on my dignity.
So that's what they're naming it these days.
Oh, you stupid coward. You led us into a trap, an ambush. Why didn't you warn us about the archer?
I didn't know.
You didn't know. Most of my patrol wiped out, and you didn't know.
Silence!
Yes, silence yourself, human.
Oh.
Barius's jeweled sword moved slowly through the air to point at the goblins.
You haven't lost your penchant for melodrama.
Melodramatic or not, that sword dripped blue-black goblin blood, and Jig wasn't about to laugh.
Answer me one question, goblins. Which of you assaulted me in your cowardly attempt to escape?
Without thinking about the consequences, without seeing anything but the tip of that blood-soaked sword, Jig's hand raised as if of its own will. Raised and pointed at Porak.
What?
Porak lunged at Jig. Smudge leaped from Jig's shoulder and scurried into the corner. Marius's gloved hand caught Porak by the belt and flung him back onto the floor. He landed next to one of the bodies. Dazed, he clutched his head, and his eyes fell upon the hatchet the dead goblin had dropped. Snatching up his new weapon, Porak charged. Jig scooped up his fire spider and watched. Barius took one step back, then another, flicking his sword out of the way of Porak's mad swings. On the third step, that sword dipped beneath the axe, then up. Even with Jig's poor vision, he could see blue blood spray the prince's tunic.
"'Twas an honorable fight. The prisoner grabbed an axe and attacked. I had no choice but to defend myself.
True. A fair fight, despite the fact that the goblin had been shot twice. Likewise, I expect it was pure chance that my brother flung the prisoner within arm's reach of a weapon. Most noble indeed.
Oh, Earthmaker. If you wanted penance out of me, why couldn't it be something simple? Send me to move the Serpent River or chase the orcs out of the Northlands. How did I offend you so that you led me here with these two louts?
That quick prayer finished, Darnak grabbed a leather knapsack and rummaged through the contents.
Jig saw rations, clothes, a whetstone, a bedroll, a large hammer. The dwarf carried an entire shop on his back.
Aha!
Darnak plunged a hand into the pack and seized a length of rope. He cut off about 10 feet or so, which he tossed to Barius.
Tie the last one up.
With that, Darnak began the momentous task of cramming everything back into his pack. Jig's hands were jerked behind his back and bound tightly enough to scrape skin from his wrists. When Barius was done, 6 feet of rope stretched out behind Jig like a leash. The prince grabbed the other end and dragged Jig toward the rest of the adventurers. In passing, he kicked the body of Captain Porak.
That's the last goblin who tried to flee from me. Keep that in mind if you're harboring thoughts of escape.
Jig noticed that Barius didn't say anything about how his prisoner had escaped. He still couldn't believe his luck at the adventurer's mistake. If they had recognized Jig as the goblin who had escaped before, nothing would have stopped Barius from killing him. On further thought, their mistake wasn't as surprising as it appeared. After all, Jig wouldn't have been able to tell the two humans apart if they weren't dressed so differently.
Easy there. He's a prisoner now, and the gods expect civilized treatment from folks such as us.
I doubt very much that they would treat us with the same courtesy.
So, you speak human, goblin?
Aye.
Excellent. I'm called Brother Darnak Stonesplitter, tutor and scribe to their majesties Barius and Risland Wendelson, 7th and 8th sons of King Wendel and Queen Genevieve of Adenkar. That's Rhianna over there. You try to betray us, we'll kill you. Same holds true if you try to escape. I don't like it, but we can't have you running loose, telling everyone we're here. But if you cooperate, I'll do my best to see you're still breathing at the end of the day.
Enough of this. We should get moving. The rod would be in our hands already if you hadn't been so determined to map out every inch of this underground tomb.
Never underestimate the usefulness of a good map. Try walking through the iron mines of the Northern Peninsula and you'll quickly come to appreciate my quill. If you ever find your way back out, that is.
Will you let me go and you find whatever it is you want?
Of course.
So, what is it you're looking for?
We seek the Rod of Creation.
The Rod of Creation?
Every goblin knew of it, but no goblin knew anything about it. Or rather, they all knew the same three things. First, the rod was ancient, powerful magic. Second, it had been hidden in this mountain ages ago to keep it safe. Finally, trying to steal the rod was an elaborate but foolproof way to commit suicide.
Surely you've heard the poem. There was a mage named Elnoraine who lived in times long past. A merrier man was rarely seen, for he made magic last. One day he met a lonely queen, a lass as pure as gold. His eye for beauty was quite keen, so he said this in bold: "A wizard am I, whom many dread, with power like a god. So come with me to yonder bed and see my mighty rod."
Darnak, please! What is this dwarven nonsense of which you recite?
It demeans the very memory of the wizard Elnoraine.
Allow me. Ages passed, the high gods clashed. The skies turned black and lightning flashed. We men were naught but pawns who fought, and oh, the terror that was wrought as war swept o'er this world so vast. The gods chose 9 from all mankind to be wizards of the blackest kind. They pooled their might. From darkest night, they summoned dragons to roam and fight, and in their wake the widows pined. The gods' war ended, their quarrel they mended, and mankind their victims tended. But wizards' greed had fed their need for power greater than dragon steeds. And so another war pretended. But in that age of the bloody mage, there came an old and tired sage, who raised his eyes toward blackened skies, and spoke a spell to terrorize those butchers born of God's own rage. The dragons fled, the 9 fell dead, the power from their broken bodies bled into a wand which he had planned to bury deep in a faraway land, and it would stay safe once he lay dead.
First of all, as any tome will tell you, there were 12 mage gods, not 9. You're confusing Elnoraine with a completely different tale. Furthermore, that last stanza should begin, "The spell was spoke, the powers broke, the mages died in sickly smoke."
Nonsense! The spell was spoke? What bard would dare set such a clumsy rhyme to poem?
Bah! Neither is the gut-ripping style of the dwarf version.
So, what you're saying is that Elnoraine was a wizard?
Did you not hear my poem? The Epic of Elnoraine is famous. Surely even here you've heard of the great mage who healed the world after the God Wars.
The gist is this. Elnoraine was a mighty wizard, but he's dead now. Before he went, he trapped a goodly bit of power in his wand.
Rod. The bards said wand to make the rhyme work, but it was a rod. About 3 feet long and made of simple wood.
So, he put that power into a rod. The rod of creation. The power in that thing was the same magic the gods used to bring dragons into the world. According to legend, Elnoraine used it to make this whole mountain out of nothing. Pulled it out of the ground in a single day, then carved out these here tunnels to protect the rod after he was gone. Didn't want anyone else to get their hands on it, you see. Earthmaker only knows what guards the rod today.
A dragon.
What did you say?
A dragon. Ironic, yet there's a certain logic to Elnoraine's choice. The magic used to create dragonkind could also destroy them. So what creature would have a greater cause to keep the rod safe?
We knew we faced an opponent of some power.
An opponent of some power? Lad, you've either got the greatest gift of understatement ever seen in a human, or else you've not the slightest idea what you're talking about. You'd be lucky if your precious sword doesn't snap like a twig against a dragon's scales. As for Risland, he may know how to toss magic about, but a dragon is magic. Throwing spells at one is like pissing on a forest fire. Either way, you're going to burn. We'll need Earthmaker's blessing to steal the rod from one of those beasts.
Is Earthmaker another adventurer?
Is that a joke? For if so, it's in poor taste.
Silas Earthmaker is his god.
Will he help you fight Straum? That's the dragon's name.
Earthmaker expects every man to prove himself. He'll not interfere in a fight, even when the odds are against us.
Oh, it doesn't sound like much help.
What would you be known as gods, goblin?
Jig started to answer, but closed his mouth when he saw Rihanna shake her head.
Nothing.
That seemed to satisfy the dwarf. Darnak turned back to the humans, leaving Jig to study Rihanna and wonder again what she was doing here. To judge by the way the others ignored her, she wasn't a friend. She had done nothing during the fight, so she wasn't here to help during combat. In fact, the only thing she had done was hide and stay out of the way, which wasn't a bad example for Jig to follow. So he sat down against the wall and tried to wrap his brain around exactly what this party wanted to do. To steal the rod from Straum's own hoard was unthinkable. As Darnak had said, their best efforts would do little more than annoy the great beast, and the most they could hope for was a swift death by flame, tooth, or talon. If the dragon was in a bad mood, he had other ways to dispose of those who annoyed him. Jig knew of tales wherein Straum had stolen the very souls of his enemies. Others he simply turned over to the necromancer, the sorceress master of the dead, who some said dwelled beneath these very tunnels. Jig had wondered about Barius's state of mind from the moment he heard the prince speak.
Elnoraine placed the rod here to keep it safe?
Now you're getting it.
And Elnoraine was a smart man?
The wisest mage of his time. Indeed, perhaps the wisest man in all of human history.
And you want to take the rod away, even though Elnoraine went to such lengths to keep you from doing that?
That is precisely our intention. To rescue the rod is my quest. Tradition and honor require me to prove myself to my father the king, as well as to his subjects. My 6 brothers before me each undertook such a quest. But by retrieving the rod of creation, I shall prove myself a man of more courage and strength than the best of them.
How many of your brothers survived these quests?
4.
3.
Untrue, Thar survived.
Thar believed himself to be the god of the sea. He fought a master mage to the east. The mage died, but he took Thar's mind with him. So our brother lived, but he developed the unfortunate habit of running nude through the palace, searching for his giant starfish. He drowned in the moat 6 months later. It seems that our god of the sea never learned how to swim.
Enough!
Darnak tucked his map into a long leather tube, which he slid into his belt.
We get no closer to the rod by standing here telling old tales. Goblin, which way leads to the deeper tunnels?
Jig stopped himself before he could answer truthfully. As the saying went, truth caused more trouble than humans and hobgoblins combined. The last thing he wanted to admit was that he knew no more than they did. They wanted a guide, and a guide they would have. Anything to keep himself breathing a bit longer.
This way.
Your enthusiasm is admirable, but we prefer to be prepared before charging into the shadowy bowels of the earth.
Jig sat down and tried not to think about that image. Darnak grabbed a lantern out of his seemingly bottomless pack and handed it to Barius. Jig stared, fascinated by the device. The lantern was a small metal box with four hinged flaps that could be left open or closed, allowing Barius to shutter the lantern completely when necessary. Or, by leaving only one flap open, the lantern could send a beam of light into the tunnels without being as obvious as a torch.
I shall go first, accompanied by our goblin guide. Darnak will follow behind me, that he may continue to draw his map by the light of the lantern. Brother, I trust you are able to guard the rear, as well as keep an eye on our young elf, of course.
A few scrapes of flint against steel sent sparks into the lantern to light the wick, and a yellow glow spread throughout the room. Darnak stomped out the few smoldering torches the goblins had brought with them.
Be wary, my friends. We have beaten the enemy's first attack, but their resistance will only grow as we venture deeper into their nests. No doubt we will need every bit of courage, every ounce of strength to survive.
Either lead the way or hand the lantern to someone who will.
Barius tugged Jig along. Progress was much slower than Jig had expected. After an hour, they still hadn't reached the junction of the three tunnels. Goblins in a hurry could run the distance in under 10 minutes. But goblins weren't accompanied by a dwarven scribe, one who insisted on mapping every twist and turn, often retracing his steps so he could get a more accurate sense of the distance. By the time they reached the junction point, Jig wanted to scream. Bad enough to be a prisoner, whose only hope at this point was to die quickly before they reached the lake.
24, 25, 26. No, wait. There's a turn here. Better pace off the inside and outside walls. Wonder if the tunnel narrows at all. Nope. Still 6 paces wide.
Listening to Darnak mumble to himself was pure torture. Worse, as a dwarf and a teacher, Darnak apparently thought it his duty to critique the stonework as they went, and he was eager to share his observations with the others.
Mahogany obsidian. Definitely magic. Someone sent enough heat through this place to melt the rock itself. Even the ceilings have a layer of the stuff. Molten rock is denser, see, so Elnarain basically burned this place into the mountain. The dark red color comes from impurities in the rock, iron and other elements.
Darnak stopped to hit a small hammer against the wall.
Look there, not even a scratch. Normal obsidian flakes away and leaves a nasty edge. I'm guessing that's magic at work again. Good thing, too. If the floor were chipped and rough like normal obsidian, it would shred your feet right through those boots.
Wait.
Risland held up a hand, cutting off Darnak's insights on the buildup of dirt and dust by generations of goblins. Taking the lantern, he shone a light back down the tunnel.
There should be bodies here. I shot at least 6 goblins before joining you.
You only now notice their absence, brother. Your powers of observation continue to astound me.
Darnak knelt to study the ground. No trace of blood showed on the floor.
Could we have passed the corpses without noticing?
No, I'd have drawn them on the map.
I can understand coming back to collect the bodies, but would your people have cleaned the blood from the floors?
Why would we return for goblin dead? We've eaten well these past days.
Ugh!
To give them a proper burial.
You bury your dead?
Not always. At times they're burned on a funeral pyre so the sparks can rise to the heavens.
That's disgusting.
Those who want to keep breathing know it's not a wise thing to be mocking dwarven rituals, goblin.
The smell. Burning hair and skin.
Then how do goblins honor their dead? What, did your friends throw the bodies into a pit somewhere to rot?
They're only bodies. We leave them there for the carrion worms.
For the worms? It is an offense against the gods, even for goblins.
Jig wanted to argue, but that would only fuel their anger. Better to stare at the floor and hope they didn't decide to punish him for whatever offense it was that goblins had committed.
The gods have never complained, so why should these adventurers?
It wasn't like goblins left human and dwarven bodies for the worms. Dead adventurers were things to be valued and treasured, especially warriors, who often carried enough muscle to make an entire meal by themselves. He started to explain, then noticed Rihanna, who still looked a bit nauseated. Maybe they wouldn't take kindly to hearing that if they died, they would end up in Golaka's cauldron. But if they didn't want to be left for the worms, and they didn't want to fill goblin bellies, they should go somewhere else to die. The thought of Golaka reminded him of the smells of the kitchen, and in that instant he felt a wash of homesickness stronger than anything he had ever experienced. He would have given anything to be back in the lair, stealing just one sip from Golaka's huge stirring spoon, tasting the tender meat and tangy broth. He eyed Darnak and tried not to think about the last time he had tasted fresh dwarf.
The tunnel splits. Which way, guide?
Barius raised his lantern so they could see the dark openings up ahead. Thankful for the change of subject, Jig hurried to the front and stared at the two tunnels. The right branch was the one he knew well. Depending on the turns they took, that tunnel would take them back to goblin territory. The left path could go anywhere. Older goblins had a saying, "Go with the danger you know, for that's easier to run away from."
To the right.
That tunnel wasn't exactly safe either. Hobgoblins were an angry, vicious, territorial lot. They wouldn't let anyone pass without a fight. Still, better to go with the danger you know.
By Earthmaker's hammer! What manner of beast is that?
Oh, carrion worm. Old one, from the looks of it.
You permit that to consume your dead?
Jig shrugged, not wanting to continue that discussion. Carrion worms resembled oversized white caterpillars. This one was about 5 feet long, and most of its round segments were bloated, probably with the remains of Porax Patrol. Each segment had a circular mouth on the underside and 4 black feet, two of which the worm used to shovel food into its mouth while keeping the other two on the floor for balance. When they grew too long, the worms would reproduce by breaking apart, sometimes into as many as 6 or 7 shorter worms. At other times, when food was scarce, they turned on each other, and many starving worms became a single, well-fed carrion worm. An elegant cycle, and one which kept the tunnels clean. Carrion worms were blind, but their senses of smell and hearing were uncanny. They could sense a battle from the other side of the mountain, and they never left so much as a drop of blood. This one had been munching on a splinter of bone, probably a bit of goblin it had dragged here to enjoy. At the sound of the adventurers' voices, it clutched the bone with the feet of its middle segments. It ran into the darkness, moving like an overgrown inchworm.
It eats even the weapons and clothing?
The clothing, yes. Weapons they take back to their nests. They like the feel of the metal.
Rihanna pointed to a thin trail of liquid on the floor.
What's that?
Worm piss. They use it to mark their path. They can find their way back by following the smell, even in the dark.
That was a created creature. Like dragons were born of common lizards, the worm originated from its simpler cousins in the earth. The rod is here.
Darnak dipped his quill in ink. He had secured the ink pot to the strap of his backpack in a tiny harness. A leather thong around the neck of the pot kept it from falling free. Darnak scratched a few lines on his parchment, presumably marking the spot they had found the worms. Though why that information was useful, Jig had no idea.
Let us be on our way.
Barius tugged Jig's rope, forcing him forward and wrenching his shoulder. They passed the tall crack that led back to the goblin lair. A slight draft carried the smell of sizzling meat into the tunnel.
What's up that way? What's that awful stench?
There's nothing down there. It's a crack in the rock. 100-foot chimney to the hobgoblin kitchens below.
After waiting for Darnak to sketch the dark crack and label it 100-foot chimney to hobgoblin kitchens, they moved on. The tunnels slanted upward here, and Jig instinctively leaned forward to compensate. After a while, the muscles in the backs of his legs began to complain. He wasn't used to hiking for so long, and even the slight incline was enough to tire him.
Halt! What manner of statue is this?
To the right, an archway of dark red stone led down to another tunnel, this one narrow and low. The humans would have to duck to keep from scraping their heads. Varius aimed the lantern beam at the wall of the side tunnel, lighting up a detailed statue of a hobgoblin whose glass head nearly touched the ceiling. Jig saw a wicked, double-bladed axe in the hobgoblin's hand. A pointed helmet covered most of the head. Muscles bulged along the bare arms and legs, and a round spiked shield hid most of the hobgoblin's torso.
Nasty looking fella.
We should keep going. That's hobgoblin territory. We shouldn't pass the marker.
Hobgoblin, is it? Looks like an oversized goblin to me.
Come! In his nervousness, Jig actually tugged the rope that tied him to Varius. Varius pulled him back, but with far more force. Jig stumbled closer to the archway, barely managing not to crash into the human.
Why so afraid? Have you never explored the depths of this tunnel?
I'm still alive, aren't I?
Then how do we know there isn't some faster way to our goal? Our vaunted guide tells us we cannot go a certain way, but what path should we explore if not those forbidden even to the monsters? Does it not follow that those forbidden paths should be the ones to lead to the greatest treasures?
As boys, we were forbidden to explore the torture chamber. I seem to remember you following similar logic when you snuck down after father.
Aye, you had nightmares for months and kept your brothers awake with your screaming until they moved you to my chambers. As much to keep them from killing you in your sleep as to comfort you. Not that I wasn't tempted to shut you up a time or two myself.
May I remind you that this is my quest and the two of you are here at my sufferance? I will be the one to decide our path, and I choose to explore a bit of this hobgoblin lair. Worry not. What is terrible to a goblin is hardly an annoyance to a true warrior.
You can't.
Can't, is it? Come, and we shall teach this goblin what a prince can and cannot do.
Varius tightened his grip on the rope and pulled Jig forward. The others looked reluctant, but they followed. Dornak started to draw the hobgoblin statue onto his map. Something moved beneath Varius's boot. Fell away, and they plummeted into darkness. The lantern died as it hit the rock-littered ground of a pit.
Where are we? What happened?
What happened is we fell into a damn trap.
How was I to know?
The goblin tried to warn you.
The goblin wanted nothing more than to flee. He said nothing of any trap.
I didn't tell you not to hold your sword by the pointy end either.
Jig held his tongue and scooted away from the others. Varius had to let go of Jig's rope in the fall, and right now the last thing Jig wanted was to let the prince get his hands on Jig's throat.
If this rock is magically strong, Elnoren himself must have created this pit 5,000 years ago.
Smells like piss and mud down here.
Jig's fingers touched metal, and he froze. Slowly, he traced the outline of a pitted, broken sword. If it still had any edge to it, he might be able to free himself from this rope.
Oh, yeah.
A quick rub of the blade told Jig luck was with him. Ignoring his now bleeding finger, he began to saw the knot against the sword's edge. Another accidental cut told him the edge was sharper near the hilt. With that knowledge, Jig eventually managed to free himself. Smudge found him and crawled up his leg. The fire spider made it to Jig's thigh before he felt the tiny burning footsteps.
What's Smudge afraid of? And what happened to the owner of that sword? Where's the lantern?
Shut up! The lantern?
It slipped free in the fall.
Something else is down here.
Here we sit arguing like children. Earthmaker, help us. We've been waiting like lambs at slaughter.
On their hands and knees, they began to scour the dirt. Jig's cut fingers stung. Suddenly, he jabbed himself in the palm with what felt like a splinter of bone.
The owner of the sword?
It did nothing to help his fear. Smudge had grown so hot, Jig had to set him on the ground.
Stay close.
I have the lantern!
Sparks flew, surprisingly bright, as the prince scraped flint against the steel guard of his dagger.
What's that?
I hear nothing.
Jig wasn't surprised. The monsters would be cracking Varius's bones for marrow by the time those puny human ears heard anything unusual.